the fairest of them all. The mayor quickly judges and replies, "You are queen," which to me implies that a crown of beauty will be given. Crowds will applaud and cheer, but are things always as they appear? Oh, mirror, mirror on the wall, will I ever be the fairest of all? Some girls will run this race for the face. But ask yourself, do you even have to run at all? This is not a fairy tale. Once upon a time, long, long ago, there lived a girl. And this girl was no ordinary girl because she was a princess. Her father was a kind-hearted, benevolent king, and he loved her very much. He owned all the land as far as the eye could see. She and her father were inseparable. She trusted him with everything in her heart, and he cherished her. And many nights, as he sat on his throne, she would crawl into his lap. He told her he loved her. He sang songs over her. They talked and talked, and she was the apple of his eye, and she was deeply satisfied. Now, her father had given her a tiny bag of seeds when she was born. The seeds were very small and great in number, and her father would tell her every night the seeds were special. Inside them was the potential for mighty trees. Though they be mighty, they would be invisible. Sitting on his knees, the girl listened to colorful stories of a princely husbandman. Walking through the grove of trees, carefully considering each one. The garden was most certainly real, he assured her, and when she was young, she believed her father. But later, she grew to laugh at his fairy tales. She knew there was no invisible garden or orchard. And as she grew up, as all girls eventually do, she became a young lady, and she was no longer a girl, freely skipping and laughing and jumping through the garden, the castle, and playing hide-and-go-seek. No, and furthermore, because she was so talented, she'd been chosen to go to a very elite middle school. She would have to move away from the castle, and the day she left, her father gave her a small, worn leather case, and he asked her never, ever to lose it. The case held many letters, for he had begun writing to her since before she had been born. And as she traveled the long journey to her new home, she sat contently with the case in her lap, and she read each letter from her father as the miles passed by. Once settled in her new room at school, she focused upon her studies, which had certainly grown more difficult. Moving away from home was different, but exciting. She enjoyed the middle school and appreciated the diversity. She was challenged, and she was confident. And as time continued, she began to make friends. And her father wrote her a letter every week faithfully, and she wrote him back for a while. But as time progressed, she had less and less time for his letters. Many lay unopened under piles of clothes to be washed, and some she just shoved in the old leather case, promising herself that she would read them soon. She called him every now and then, and they would talk, but she was becoming too busy for lengthy conversations. She was busy. Her dad understood. Further, the young woman began to change, and she was taller now, and she was changing inside and out, and she felt comfortable, and she liked who she was becoming. That is, until one day at lunch, and as she sat alone at the banquet hall, she heard a young man walk behind her. She felt a tap on her back. He walked away quickly. Soon, snickering could be heard from the table behind her. She felt her face grow red. What were they laughing about? Quickly, she finished her food. And as she moved to throw away her trash, a beautiful and popular princess came up behind her. And she removed a note that had been taped to her back. Wordlessly and with a faint smirk, the lovely girl shoved the note that said Fatty. It was scrawled across the paper, along with a caricature of a pig's body. She couldn't believe this had been taped to her back. Wanting to disappear, her eyes filled with tears and she fled the room. She was mortified. To make matters worse, instead of disputing the young man's attack on her figure, her friends politely agreed that, well, she could stand to lose a few pounds. Didn't she know that Prince Christopher thought she had a pretty face if she could just slim up a bit? He could be interested. This angered her at first. But later, alone, her anger gave way to insecurity. She started to poke at her stomach, her hips. Perhaps she did need to improve, she thought. Her friends, especially the matchmaker types, were delighted that she had finally taken an interest in her appearance. They felt the liberty to pour out all type of suggestions. Here, let me help you with those bushy eyebrows. Okay. Don't you want something a little less frumpy to wear to the ball? Yeah. Yeah? Wouldn't your feet look cuter in high heels?
Oh, they kind of hurt feet, but
that's not in style, voices told her. Voices told her, look, you really shouldn't wear such baggy clothes. I mean, don't you know tighter is better? It's all about the look, they said. Well, she wasn't even aware there was a look. But now she saw it everywhere. And that is how her chestnut cascading curls became straight and blonde. Her lips became a brighter hue, her cheeks a little more rosy, and her eyes a sultry, dark disguise. She was pretty now, they said. Quietly, she gazed at her reflection. She was pleased with her new look, but it wasn't really her she saw in the mirror anymore. And by this time, the girl had all but forgotten about her father's letters and his silly seeds. Her conversations with him slowly became a glimmering memory. Although he had told her many times, you are beautiful to me, just as you remain. But he wasn't here. Forgetting his loving words, she focused more and more on becoming what those around her wanted her to be. So she plucked, she pruned, she cut, she curled, she bleached, she straightened, she whitened. And her waistline, oh, she dieted. She skipped meals. She exercised many times, too much. To the point of weakness, sometimes she would work out, many times with little to eat. The worst was that every week in the castle, they had an amazing feast. Oh, the morsels, delicious, famished. She would merely nibble at her plate, insisting, I'm full, really. And feeling that gnawing in her stomach while others indulged, that reassured her that she was improving. And periodically, she allowed herself to eat. But quickly, she hid in secret places to get rid of the food, fearing the humiliation she would endure if she ever became fatty again. Shame racked her aching heart, and in it, a tiny voice whispered, and every glance in the looking glass confirmed she still needed work. Because of this new lifestyle, she had to pass up on opportunities for after-school activities. She was too occupied keeping up with the new her. Exhausted, she continued to keep herself slim and determined she kept up with the crowd. The shoes, the skirts, the hair, Her wardrobe took so much effort and time and money, for you know that the seasons of style rapidly change. Just when what you have, you think it's cute, oh, something new comes along. Still, surely all this was worth it. Surely the expense and the effort. Surely through all of this, she was improving. She was improving, wasn't she? Improving? Then to her delight, right before her 16th birthday, a package came. It was mysterious. She didn't know who it was from. And inside it was a shiny silver box. Inside the silver box were many mysterious and thrilling things. So much knowledge abounded in it. Further, she could talk to anyone on earth through the box. To her sheer delight, she and her friends could capture themselves in it. But this was better than any ordinary mirror. Oh no, it was magic. With just a few brushes of her fingers and a few clicks, she could manipulate her image. She could apply filters and masks, instantly improving her skin tone, her waist, her lips, and so she did. But however, this silver gift did not come without a price tag. And instead of studying, she spent time focused on it. Her grades suffered. She began to check it a lot, and it had a kind of control over her. If she couldn't find it, she would get nervous. Further, she found it affected her moods. She grew angry and jealous if others seemed to have more fun in their post or looked prettier than she did. If someone wore a new ball gown that she didn't have, she began to feel anxiety until she obtained it, or something better. This device could affirm her, yet at other times crush her. Despite all of this, she fell in love with the box, and she believed she was adored. In the world, inside this small silver rectangle, it would chime and confirm that time and time again. And the girl was finally satisfied with herself, but not really. Eventually, inevitably, young princes began to flock to her, and she chatted with them until late in the evening. Their compliments flowed like rain, and she responded, and their touches affirmed. She must finally be beautiful. Many nights her father called her, yet she didn't answer. His letters returned to sender, for the girl no longer even checked her mailbox. Because of her constant focus on the imaginary world in the box, she believed she was loved, and she was pretty, they said. She was popular, they acknowledged, and she was satisfied. But not really. Sometimes, alone, in the silence of her room, she felt hollow, hungry, empty, a fraud, afraid, worthless, broken, ugly. When the girl turned 18, the time had come for her to graduate. She had not seen her father for a long time, and as she packed up her room to go, she cleared out under her bed. There, underneath it, she found, covered in dust, the old leather case. Suddenly, she remembered the forgotten letters, and with trembling hands, she opened the case. There on top sat a letter. She opened the faded, dry envelope and began to read it. She read that one, and another, and another, and another, and she read and read and read until the last pink glow of the sun faded beyond the horizon and the blanket of night fell. And as she read his words, she felt something deep within her that made her catch her breath. A lump formed first in her chest, and it moved to her throat, and then spilled from her eyes. The father wrote of his love and of her beauty, of her worth, of the garden. The seeds. She had forgotten all about the seeds. They had been here, she thought, and she began to frantically search for them. Where were they? Why she felt such an urgency to find them, she could not figure out, but she knew she must go to her father. She must go and find the seeds, and at the first light of dawn, she left. She returned to the castle. She ran until she reached the gates of her father's garden, and then she slowed. Would her father recognize her? Would he be angry at her? She stopped, and there she saw her father kindly tending to his garden. He turned at the sound of her footsteps. He smiled. There was not in her the ability to return his smile. She felt guilt wrap its chains around her, and she couldn't come to him. So the kind king opened his arms, and he came to her. He held her. He spoke kindly to her, and he said, "You are my child, enough. You have always been enough." And the girl believed, and she was deeply satisfied. "But Father," she asked, "where are those seeds?" Oh, I have them, my child. But the bag, it's no longer full. You have planted already. Here's what has grown." Her eyes followed the king's gesture to an empty plot of land. And where there had been nothing but grass before, a shadowy figure of a tree began to appear, shimmering at first. As if it were a mirage, the outline grew darker and more vivid. You see, this tree had always been growing. She just had been unable to see it. As the tree materialized, the princess gasped in horror. Something was amiss. The fruit! Oh! The tree's branches were heavy with fruit, but none she or you or anyone else would ever want to eat. Black, spotted, rotten fruit hung on the limbs. Bitter tears flowed, for she could now see what she had been growing. She understood. The hours wasted, the time spent, the consumption with herself and pleasing others, the self-harm. The tree's fruit could be of no use to anyone. She fell to her knees and she wept. "Father," she cried, "is there no remedy for this? I can't stand this tree. What can I do?" Ever so quietly, in his full majesty, her father came down to her. He sat beside her on the dirt. He gently cupped her face in his hand. He pressed the small bag of seeds, now glowing with the light of what remained, softly into her palm. "My dear child," he whispered, "all is not lost. Every day you have an opportunity to plant seeds that will become the trees of your tomorrow. By your time and by your thoughts will the tree be nourished. Your actions are the sunlight and your focus is the rain. You're not satisfied with this tree you've grown? Why, the remedy is simple. Simply begin to plant another." And so she did. And many years passed. Many, many years passed. As golden sunbeams warm their backs, a prince walks hand in hand with the princess, his princess, down the orchard's path. He stops her at an enormous tree glimmering with life, and it seems to vibrate, and he says, "Look, this one. Upon the glorious tree rest many majestic birds, and from its limbs come songs more beautiful than she has ever heard. Hanging from the boughs is fruit that shines as if filled with the sun itself. Love, joy, peace." A little boy runs. He jumps. He pulls a low-hanging pear, and his laughter bounces all around. Juice runs down his smiling cheeks. Patience, kindness, goodness. A woman soon to bear a baby. She cups a piece of fruit as she strolls past. Faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. The prince says, as he smiles at his princess, who realizes that this is her tree. Well, God's design means that as women, we are created as things of beauty. And we are born with an intrinsic need and desire for love and acceptance and approval and admiration. But through time, that desire has morphed.
And it can at times be something very ugly. And you all know, as at your age, by this age, you know, that the world of women can be one full of comparison and competition. In the case of Sister Elise and myself, the fight to be labeled beautiful was very literally a competition in the form of beauty pageants when we were younger. And even though we gained the world's approval through sashes and crowns and flowers and all that, the true peace of acceptance can only come from one place, the place where true beauty is celebrated, and that is in the eyes of God. Our success in the world's competition didn't fill the void of insecurity that the world had created for us. And that void was so great, in fact, that is what brought us together to talk to you today. We found out that we have a common thread in our testimonies from that time of our life, and that thread was eating disorder. I wasn't raised apostolic, but I grew up in a Christian home, and I got the Holy Ghost when I was 12 years old. But by the time I was a teenager, I was consumed with externals, right? Obsessed with the aesthetic. Looks, beauty, makeup, jewelry, clothes, all of those sorts of things. And everything was about what did people think about me when they saw me. To make a long story short, when I was a junior in high school, I began to struggle with an eating disorder. And even though as a dancer I was very slim, I was very insecure, and I began purging to try to become skinnier. And I know that's a really ugly thing to talk about, but it's real. And one day, as I did this, because like I said, I did have the Holy Ghost, as I was engaged in this, God spoke to me, and he said, if you continue in this, you are going to destroy our relationship. Well, that was a shocking thing. Can you imagine God speaking to you and saying, this thing that you're doing is going to tear you apart from me? You see, you can't serve two masters. So I couldn't call Jesus Lord while letting my flesh rule my life. And I wasn't perfect, but I knew that if there's one thing I wanted in life, I wanted to have a relationship with God. I didn't want to destroy that. And so at that point, I repented and I laid that down. So why are we talking about this today? Well, there's a few reasons. First of all, I want you to realize that most, and I would venture to say all, young women at one point or another feel uncomfortable with themselves, feel insecure about their looks. That's just the part of the sickness of being a woman. It comes to everyone, even to girls who wear makeup, and even to girls who dye their hair, and even to girls who win beauty pageants, and who the world says, yep, you're beautiful. No one is inoculated from that. No one is immune to that out there. So I don't want you to ever believe that those feelings come from the fact that you walk in holiness. Don't ever think that if I could just do X, Y, or Z, then I would be beautiful. Then I would feel beautiful. Because feeling beautiful is only going to come from one place. And that's going to be by walking in the definition that God says is true beauty. And that comes from the inside. Okay? Second of all, you need to understand that there is a spiritual component to what we do in our bodies. God made it clear to me that my eating disorder was affecting more than just how I looked, okay? That flesh rule of my mind was robbing my spirit, and it opened the door for the enemy to try to deceive me further. In later years, I fought against the inclination to self-harm, which I never did, thank God, because I did see that that was wrong, and that was dangerous, and that was not healthy. But I recognized that allowing an eating disorder into my life was a gateway that could have led to more destructive behavior, because really that eating disorder is a harmless form of self-harm. You're hurting yourself. And worst of all, in my mind, worst of all, was that I wasted valuable strength that I could have spent chasing after God. I'm not here today to pet your ego and tell you how beautiful you are just the way you are, and how important you are, and that you're worthy of love. Although, you are beautiful, you are worthy and loved, and you are important. But our mission with this talk is to help you get a new perspective about yourself, about how you look at yourself in the mirror, and about how you spend yourself. Now, what does that mean, how you spend yourself? Jocelyn, can I get you to help me? And Nicole, you don't have to do anything embarrassing, don't worry, you just have to hold a rope. So if you'll just hold that in, and you'll hold that in, okay? We are complex beings, okay? Body, soul, and spirit, okay? Your spirit, if it's alive in Christ, is influenced by and drawn to the Spirit of God. And your flesh, your body, is drawn to and influenced by other things, okay? By the world and what the world says about you, and how the world addresses women and what they think about us. Your soul, which we understand to be your mind, your will, your emotions, hangs in the balance. Whether or not you realize it, you are in a tug of war, okay? And I'm the monkey in the middle. Now, your soul is at the center. While there are infinite different thoughts that we can think and infinite different emotions that we can feel, we are finite beings, which means we can only think so many thoughts in a day, or a year, or a lifetime. We choose by our will where we give the strength of our thoughts and emotions. Are you spending yourself on the spirit, or are you spending yourself on the flesh? And if you notice, your mind, your will and emotions, your spirit, your soul, wherever I lend the strength of my soul, is going to be the side that wins, that thrives, that dominates. Thank you, girls. Y'all can sit down. Watchman Nee, if you ever heard of Watchman Nee, he was a Chinese Christian, he was an author, he wrote several books, and in one book called The Release of the Spirit, he said, if one's attention is focused on one matter and he exhausts all his time in thinking about it, he will have no strength to think about other matters. Now, please don't understand what we're saying today. There's no harm in thinking about your appearance, okay? I'm not shaming anybody who, like, took a shower today, okay? I showered today. Hey, look, I worked hard on this puff, all right? I thought about this. But I'm all about shopping. Anybody like to shop? I know y'all like to shop. I know y'all about to go down to the gym and shop, so be honest. I'm going to be watching. No. I'm all about doing some shopping, fixing your hair, like, brush your teeth, yeah. And sometimes we even have to do self-improvement, right? Okay, if that's what we need, then that's okay. But, because God wants us to be our best, okay, and to bring Him glory. But self-obsession, for good or bad, okay, because this can swing in both directions, whether it's looking in the mirror and thinking, oh, yes, there she is, or kind of like the story that Sister Elise was sharing. Either one of those is dangerous, and it's a dangerous form of self-obsession, really, okay? But lending excessive strength of your mind to the external, to the visible, to the carnal, is a disappointing waste. And as I shared in my testimony, and if you picked up on it, and Sister Elise's as well, it can lead you to dangerous places, physically and spiritually. The more strength that we lend to the flesh, the less there is available to the Spirit. And who knows what ideas and revelations and gifts are waiting for you? Who knows what songs you're called to compose, or books you're called to write, or ministries you're anointed to create, if you lend your strength to the things of God? This is hard for us. As females, we all struggle with this. And even as adults, we face ugly feelings sometimes and lies from the enemy sometimes when we look in the mirror. But that's why I feel compelled to talk to you about this now at your age, to encourage you to recognize your potential before you waste valuable strength on fleeting matters. You may have wondered about the title of this talk, Through the Looking Glass. How many of you guys know Alice in Wonderland? Okay, Through the Looking Glass is the sequel to Alice in Wonderland. And in the story, Alice steps through the mirror, through the looking glass, beyond her reflection, and it opens up a world to her that is full of adventure and new experiences. And the journey there culminates in her being crowned a queen. That is what I want for all of you, okay? I want you to go farther than just accepting yourself and loving yourself the way you are. That is wonderful, and that is important, and I encourage you in that because you are beautiful and worthy of love. Important, like I said. But I want you to go beyond that reflection in the mirror and give the strength of your soul to the things of God. Another real-life queen, Esther, was known for her beauty. God made her beautiful, and her beauty had a purpose, but it was not the purpose. It wasn't just so she would be beautiful. God used it as a tool to put her in a position to do great and mighty things, to save his people. Esther still gave her mind, her will, her emotions. She lent the strength of her soul to the plan of God. She fasted, she prayed, and God used her mightily. So how we spend ourselves matters. Where we apply the strength of our souls matters. I know you've heard it 1,000 times, but God has a plan for your life, and he has a purpose for you. You are valuable to him and to the church. And I want you to step through the looking glass, beyond this two-dimensional image that we see, good, bad, or ugly, regardless of what that looks like in your mind. I want you to step into the magnificent world of adventure and purpose that God has for you. And you know, you're going to find that the journey in the Spirit is going to lead you to a crown of beauty that is way more valuable than the trinkets that the world passes out. Mirror, mirror on the wall. I wish I was tan. I wish I was tall. That my lashes would grow, that my waistline would shrink. When I see my reflection, I can't help but think that it's really no wonder I feel so alone. I'm not like the girls that I see in my phone. With thousands of followers, millions of hearts, when I look at my selfie, it's made up of parts that aren't perfect or polished or flawless or fly. And the struggle leaves me feeling empty. And I ask myself, why? First of all, I'll tell you that, girl, you are wrong. You might not fit in, but you definitely belong. You belong to a God who loves you big as the sky. Do you realize you're his favorite? You're the apple of his eye. You have a beauty that is uniquely your brand. You're a masterpiece crafted by God's perfect hand. Your hair and your color, your body, your face, he molded you to show his glory and do more than just take up space. And that's why it's hard when you're hard on yourself about this flaw or that, obsessing about whether your clothes make you look fat, because beauty is fleeting. And charm is a lie. And when you think you've achieved it, the moment's gone by. And now there's a new kind of pretty. Something fresh must be done. It's a rat race for the world's approval. But you don't have to run. Look up. Look around you and take in your scene. Look deeper inside yourself. You're more than you see. So step through the looking glass into the realm unseen. There are things that you can be and do beyond your wildest dream. Hashtag be queen.
The next thing we have for you, this is a worksheet for you to fill out and to keep. I want you to keep it. I want you to revisit it, put it in a special place. Rewrite it as things change in your life. And as you fill this out, we're going to play a song. I don't think that'll work.
Oh, no.
Well, grab the lights. We're going to play a song, and I want you to listen to the words of the song as you think about what you're writing.
Be honest with yourself, but be generous to yourself, too.
You don't have to try. You don't have to try. Let your hair down, take a breath, look into the mirror at yourself. Don't you like you? 'Cause I like you.
You know, some of the things we talked about today are really uncomfortable, but we don't want to take anything for granted. If you know someone who struggles with feelings that have led to these types of behaviors or could lead to these types of behaviors, don't ever hesitate to come to someone. I know these are things that we even talked about, the fact that are probably surprising to hear from us, but you need to realize that there's nothing that you can't bring to someone you trust. And Sister Elise and I are both open to talk to you about anything that you feel like you want to or need to, so that you don't feel trapped inside those feelings, whatever they may or may not have manifested in your life. The root of it is going to be at the heart of the feelings and the lives of the enemy, right? So, if you want to come to us at any time, we are open to talk to anybody, okay? Yeah, we love y'all. Yeah, we love y'all.